Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, seeing the Andromeda Galaxy, artificial photosynthesis, and a new health program in Latin America. Here's a scientist soundbite.
The only technical game in town in order to make a sustainable, environmentally responsible, secure future is to make fuel from the sun, and that's why we are working so hard on that project.
That's chemist Nate Lewis of the California Institute of Technology. More with him later, but first, science news of the week with Emily Howard and Michael Brennan.
In the September 14th issue of Legal and Criminological Psychology, researchers at Cornell University and the University of British Columbia showed for the first time that a computerized text analysis can detect the distinct speech pattern of psychopaths. The analysis of 14 male murderers held in Canadian prisons reveals that psychopaths make identifiable word choices beyond conscious control when talking about their crimes. The words of psychopathic murderers tend to match their personalities and to reflect selfishness, detachment from their crimes, and emotional flatness.
On October 12th, researchers from the UK and Chicago's Field Museum published research online suggesting that Tyrannosaurus rex, the largest carnivore ever to walk the Earth, was heavier and grew faster than previously thought. The new research suggests that hatchlings the size of a beagle grew into an 8-ton monster in about 17 years. That's adding about the weight of a sports utility vehicle every year. These scientists use precise laser scanning techniques to compare bones of adult dinosaurs to young ones.
On October 17th, NASA and Japan's Ministry of Trade released an improved version of the most complete digital topographic map of Earth to date. They created the new map, which covers 99% of Earth's landmass, from images collected by the Japanese Aster instrument aboard NASA's Terra spacecraft. The map is available now and free to everyone. To download it, come to earthsky.org and search for digital map.
The Fornax and Sculptor dwarf galaxies are neighbors to our Milky Way galaxy. A new study of these little galaxies reveals a smooth distribution of dark matter, the mysterious invisible stuff thought to have a gravitational effect on the whole universe and a critical role in its formation. This research draws into question prior theories of dark matter, which suggested it was densely packed in the center of galaxies. Astronomers announced these new results on October 17th from the Harvard-Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics.
On October 20th, scientists announced at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center that they had captured what they say is a record-breaking photo of a brown dwarf with an exceptionally cool temperature, about the temperature of a summer day in Arizona. Brown dwarfs, also known as failed stars, are like planet-star hybrids. They've got a bunch of mass, but not enough mass to burn hot and bright. Astronomers say these objects are valuable as laboratories for studying the atmospheres of planets with Earth-like temperatures outside of our solar system.
The Wildlife Conservation Society reported on October 19th that camera traps revealed a record number of jaguars in Bolivia. Scientists spotted 19 individual jaguars in Medidi National Park with the help of a strategically placed digital camera. This is a record number for a single camera trap survey in Bolivia. Experts say the new data and the confirmed accuracy of this new tracking technique will help them protect jaguars. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. We've got science interviews coming up next, but first, this is a track from Austin band Wiretree. It's called Traveling On.
I was traveling on, the wind was fast and her eyes were cold. Can you get me there? Can you get me fast? I have miles to go. I
Earth Sky, we interview the world's top scientists. Beth Lebwohl joins us with an interview of a scientist leading efforts to create energy from just sunlight and water, like plants do. Welcome, Beth.
Hey, thanks, Jorge. So I spoke with Nate Lewis, who is a very esteemed chemist over at Caltech. In fact, he is the principal investigator of the Joint Center for Artificial Photosynthesis, and he works on artificial photosynthesis, which I wasn't familiar with before I spoke to him, but essentially it's using special materials like semiconductors that, powered by light and surrounded by water, create energy the way that plants do. Okay, plants create energy, they make their own food, that's photosynthesis. But these cells, they don't create food, they create hydrogen fuel.
Plants figured out that the best way to make and harness clean energy would be to take the biggest resource we have, the sun, and to convert it into the thing that drives almost all energy consumption on our planet today, which is chemical fuel. But most of what plants make can't directly be used as fuel by humans. And so the same way that birds have feathers and we know that therefore it's possible to fly, but we don't build airplanes out of feathers, when we know it's possible to take the sunlight and make chemical fuel, we're going to build our own machines that are going to take sunlight and make directly fuel that anybody could use anywhere, anytime for their energy.
It's a little bit complicated, but essentially what he's explaining in this next bit is that these cells are built in a certain way that when light hits them, they can split water molecules. Water is composed of H2O. It splits the water molecules into oxygen and hydrogen. And hydrogen then becomes the hydrogen fuel. This is different from solar panels, because solar panels, they do not create fuel.
Yeah, it's amazing that this is so complicated. I mean, scientists haven't been able to figure out how to do this, and plants can just do this so easily.
Dr. Lewis hasn't even been able to figure out how to do it. He's tinkering with all the parts. So here he explains what he's doing.
We know it's possible with semiconducting materials, like the ones used in solar panels, but a different set of materials, to actually take those materials, and instead of covering them with electrical wires, to immersing the material in water and with sunlight, then one can split that water and produce hydrogen gas and oxygen gas directly.
And I think it's important to note here that hydrogen fuel is an exceptional fuel because, unlike fossil fuels, when it combusts, there is no carbon dioxide, a greenhouse gas known to be causing global warming. None of that is released into the atmosphere. The only byproduct is water. So that's one advantage. The other is that this technology relies on a relatively infinite resource, which is sunlight.
It's clean. And
it's clean.
There's no smog coming out the tailpipe.
So I asked Dr. Lewis, you know, when are we going to see this technology broadly applied? And his answer, as you know, as is sometimes the case in science, is he doesn't really know. But
it's a hard problem.
Yeah, it sure is. And Dr. Lewis told me why it's so important.
If we want to get to a clean energy system, we can get part of the way there with existing technology, with wind, with solar, with nuclear, but you can't get all the way there with just making cheaper what we know. And the two biggest challenges are, how do you store massive quantities of electricity And how do you make clean fuel for the 40% of transportation that cannot be electrified? Our ships, our aircraft, our heavy-duty trucks. And other than a limited amount of biofuels, the only technical game in town that could solve both of those problems that we have to solve as a planet in order to make a sustainable, environmentally responsible, secure future is to make fuel from the sun, and that's why we are working so hard on that project.
That was Nate Lewis of Caltech, interviewed by Beth Lebwohl. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. We invite you to join our community for science. Find us as EarthSky on Facebook, EarthSky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Deborah Bird is here to report on something wonderful to see in the global night sky, the Andromeda Galaxy. What's happening, Deborah?
Well, it's autumn in the Northern Hemisphere now and spring in the Southern Hemisphere. And at this time of year, from the Northern Hemisphere, you can see something really great. You can see the most distant thing that we can see with our eye alone, and that's the Andromeda Galaxy. So you're going to go outside and you're going to look toward the northeast, and you need a really, really dark sky to see this. But if you have that really dark sky, you're going to look up and you might, if your sky is dark enough, you might see a fuzzy patch. And it's about the size of a full moon, very fuzzy and hazy, and you might see that it has a bright center, and that is the Andromeda Galaxy. It's 2.2 million light years away, the most distant thing we can see with the eye.
So that's the Andromeda Galaxy for people in the Northern Hemisphere. What about people down south?
Well, right now it's autumn in the Northern Hemisphere, and meanwhile it's spring in the Southern Hemisphere. And if you were on the southern half of Earth's globe, you could look up in the sky and see the large and small Magellanic clouds. Now, these are really cool objects. They're not as far away as the Andromeda Galaxy. The Andromeda Galaxy is a couple of million light years away. The Magellanic clouds are just a couple of 100,000 light years away. They're still pretty far away, but they are not as far as the Andromeda Galaxy. And these are just smaller collections of stars. They look like detached portions of our Milky Way, the band of the Milky Way that crosses the sky. And you can see them from a place that's not so dark. The time that I saw them, I was actually on a train traveling across South America and looked up from the window of the train and saw the large and small Magellanic clouds, so they're pretty easy to see.
Skywatcher Deborah Bird. Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
We have daily night sky charts and more at earthsky.org. Earth Sky, heard on over 1,200 stations globally, including Voice of America. Luis Castilla joins us now with a report on an October 2011 study published in the Proceedings of the Royal Society that found a correlation in brain structure and Facebook friends. Welcome, Luis.
Hi, Jorge. How's it going?
Okay, fine. What's going on here?
So this study pretty much infers that the number of friends that you have on Facebook is closely related to the size of some of your brain structures, such as the amygdala. The amygdala is closely associated with emotional responses and memory. This study also says that the amount of gray matter that you have in your brain can be larger depending on the number of Facebook friends that you have. So the more friends you have, apparently, the more gray matter that you have in your brain.
So how did these researchers go about making this link between the size or the structure of people's brains and the number of Facebook friends they have? What's the connection here?
So they went and scanned the brains of 125 students on campus and compared the size of and the structure of those brains to the amount of friends that these people have on Facebook. So they said the more connected someone is on Facebook, the more friends that you have is closely correlated to the amount of gray matter in your brain. So they don't know if you're social in real life, if the internet's actually changing our brains, or if the brain's already wired like that and you're just hypersocial, and Facebook is a way of expressing that socialness.
Right. That is an important clarification, that that it's not that being active on Facebook is changing your brain in this way necessarily, but they did find that that it's likely these scientists could predict the size of certain areas of your brain, the amygdala, the right superior temporal sulcus, left middle temporal gyrus. They could reliably predict that by the number of Facebook friends, whether you hate this area was bigger or smaller than average.
Yes. You know, so being social is such an intense activity on the brain that it necessarily has to develop these areas.
And by the way, Luis, I wanted to congratulate you for the Earth Sky Science page in Espanol, how it has now over 13,000 friends. It must have an awfully large brain area.
Oh, wow. We're reaching 14,000 now. And it's a challenge. I don't know if the people who are doing this on the Spanish side's brains are larger, but we certainly enjoy it.
Yeah, where can people find out more about the Spanish page for Earth Sky?
Espanol.earthsky.org or cieloytierra.org. And you can also find us on Facebook on facebook.com/EarthSkyEspanol. We'd be very happy to have you there.
Thanks, Luis.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky is Luis Castilla, and we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. We're Earth Sky. We interview the world's top scientists. A new health pilot program in Nicaragua combines microfinance, that is small business loans to people trying to lift themselves out of poverty, with health services like screenings for cancer. Here to tell us more about it is physician Gabriela Salvador, Director of Health and Human Development for ProMujer. ProMujer is a nonprofit women's development and microfinance organization with over 200,000 clients that aims to alleviate poverty and empower women in Latin America. Dr. Salvador joins us from the studios of NPR station WBUR in Boston. Welcome, Dr. Salvador.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Tell us about primary care health services in Latin America. How is ProMujer involved?
Before explaining what's going on with public health services in Latin America, let's first take a look at the women that ProMujer works with. What's their profile? So these women are very low-income women, head of households or single mothers, running small businesses such as selling fruits or food on the streets. They earn between $2 and $10 per day. So for them, a day without work is a day without income, and there is no safety net. In the case of public health in Latin America, primary care services, which basically make up for the majority of healthcare services, have improved significantly in the last decades, particularly in areas such as maternal and child health. So interventions in these areas have relatively high coverage. On the other hand, there are still no solutions to address the increasingly growing problem of chronic diseases such as diabetes and high blood pressure. So why is this? Because the region in general is witnessing a massive migration of people from rural areas to the city. This trend has resulted in higher percentages of population leading a more sedentary lifestyle, with, let's say, greater consumption of fast food or limited or no physical activities. So the rates of obesity are shockingly high, especially in the poor segments.
Tell us about some of the things that ProMujer is doing to address some of these problems.
So ProMujer was conceived as an institution focused on empowering the women by providing education, access to health services, and microfinance services to support their business. Really, microfinance was the hook to get to these women and be able to provide health services and training. So in, for example, in the case of Nicaragua, we are conducting a pilot. So the health initiative is focused on training, access to a family doctor, and early detection through screening of conditions such as hypertension, diabetes, obesity, breast and cervical cancer, and also we do blood tests and urine tests.
That was Dr. Gabriela Salvador, Director of Health and Human Development for Pro Mujer. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Brian Britton, and Deborah Bird. Our audio engineer is Eddie Campos. And special thanks this week to our musical contributors, Wiretree, Sounda, The Georgian Company, Okote Soul Sounds, 100 Flowers, and The Black and White Years. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next stage. There are so many artists, too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next stage.